told that my efforts last episode led the wrong way. It went to Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello and not enough Chris Isaak. So I won't open with a song this time, but I wanted to get that on the record. It's Never Fall in Love with You, of course, not
I think
them.
You have a beautiful voice. You just don't have a mind for lyrics. I don't
know, and a face for radio, as apparently, as I've been told. And we're back. Welcome once again to Mike, and
you're
Oscar.
You're like one of my birds that I used to own.
I can't believe you own them. I am your host, Mike. This is my co-host also, Mike.
I am also Mike.
Continuing the Oscar category review that we've been doing. We started two episodes ago. We have thus far knocked out the Leading Ladies of Hollywood with Best Lead Actress category review. Also, the Supporting Men for the Best Supporting Actor category review. We're continuing with the men right now as we will do the Best Lead Actor category review for the Oscars coming up on Sunday, March 4th. For those of you that haven't chimed in yet, if you want to know how this format's going to play out, what we're doing in these seven episodes, we're covering the seven major Oscar categories. That'll be the four acting categories, Best Director, Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay. We take a single category, again, in this case, Best Lead Actor. We'll take the five nominees that the Academy has given us. We'll parse through them one by one. We're going to give you reasons why every actor, every nominee will go home with the Academy Award for Best Actor, and a reason why every actor will not go home with the Best Academy Award for Best Actor, and we'll perfect perfection at the end. This is not so much our takes on who should win Best Actor. It's our takes on who should win Best Actor out of this group of five.
Great hosting. I just let you go, man. That was a thing of beauty.
Gene Rayburn was a big inspiration for me, the guy that did Match Game 76 back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Great sideburns.
What reference is that?
It's nothing.
It's insanity.
It's a guy that took a lot of sick days when he was going through high school and middle school.
Okay. Well, on that note, I have nothing following that, but we covered each one of these nominees in our Oscar Sprint profile series, so go back and check those episodes out. You can easily avoid spoilers. We hope that it's a fun on-demand kind of resource as you go into this final stretch here, these last 3 weeks. We got the BAFTAs coming up next weekend.
I can't believe we're here.
Yeah,
we've been chipping away at this for a better part of 2 months now, and the Oscars night is actually on the horizon. We could see it, we could smell it, we can hear Jimmy Kimmel's tasteless jokes that get laughs anyway. I can't. Faye Dunaway can't show
how
up,
many
can
Matt
she?
Damon gimmicks. Oh, she Faye Dunaway should be there.
You think so?
She
mean, they've already done
there.
Warren Beatty's been in the commercials, so I guess yeah, it would make sense.
She could save her persona for the next rest of her life.
There's no erasing that. There's no erasing what happened.
They have to make a joke about it. They
I would
have.
Think. You're probably right. Know.
Definitely got to cover this story as we get there.
The movies are a big part of it. The movie review, the Oscar Sprint Profiles was the series we called them. And those, again, just for you that may not have heard the last two Oscar category review episodes, those were a movie-centric look. We were kind of presenting those in a way that, again, like Mike just told you, with spoiler and non-spoiler section, they're easy to pick up. If you want to go back and watch those movies, we tell you if those movies should be watched at all, et cetera, et cetera. This is our first chance to really dive into the nominations of it all. And before we predict who will win officially, which is coming up in a future episode, and before we tell you who we think should have won the year, taking the year in total, which is coming up in what we're calling our Mike, and Oscars episode, it's our little award show. We're going to tell you, like I said, again, take these nominees and flush them out fully. So with that said, let's start off in the Best Lead Actor 2017. We're going to do these in alphabetical order, and we will begin with Timothée Chalamet playing Elio in Call Me By Your Name. Mike, tell me why Timothée Chalamet will win the Oscar on March 4th.
Because the Academy can't stop listening to the 90s alt-rock man, the Presidents of the United States of America. That's a very nice laugh from a good,
that's good.
Friend.
No, that's good.
They have a song, Peaches, Peaches for Me, and that's a little Easter egg there.
Yes,
and,
yes. That's...
I enjoyed that movie. Go back and listen to that episode. It's one of our most popular. That is one of the few callbacks we're going to make. We're going to try not to rehash all the stuff we've gone over. But
probably should have said that. If a good host would have said this is going to be spoiler-free.
You said a lot of good stuff. I got to pick up where I can. Because the car scene with his mother, because the end credits, because the scene with Michael Stuhlbarg, greatness by association. He's in a lot of great scenes in this movie. He's got a chance because of the lasting impression he makes, especially those last few scenes of the movie.
Yeah, can't argue with that at all.
And these characters are idyllic. They do have a full set of flaws, though. I mean, we've referenced it lately.
Out, yeah.
They're flushed out characters. So, I mean, Elio's, you know, he's a car with no brakes. So
for
he's,
sure, yeah. I think I refer to him as a constant green light.
He doesn't treat a lot of characters well. He does have his flaws. I mean, it's a refreshing look at that character. It's a complex portrayal, like we've been saying, is necessary.
We don't want to get back into reviewing the movie as a whole. You're not dealing with an antagonist that's been so overdone and caricatured like you are in so many other of these gay romance stories, I guess.
Right, right. It's not a courtroom scene at the end of the movie.
Bible
it's not
thumper,
a hospital yeah. scene, church scene, a typical anti-LGBTQ community type of villain,
right.
evil master,
right.
You know, arch villain at the end of this one. So it's more nuanced in that way. So that's what I think.
And because it's nuanced, what I'll say is to why I think Chalamet will walk away with it. It is so nuanced, and it's so vulnerable and open. The bravest performance of the year was pulled off by a 22-year-old that showed more openness and vulnerability than his counterparts for the year, names like Denzel, Tom Hanks, and Daniel Day-Lewis.
It's a beyond his years kind of poise
Big
that
one.
He shows.
Yeah.
And he knows when to go for it mm-hmm. and be emotional and really emote. And then he has a lot of restraint. He has a lot of restraint throughout that role.
In certain ways,
Well, his character is kind of a, like you said, a green light, but the acting
Chalamet
performance.
Chalamet himself shows some
Chalamet
of these,
himself,
yes, for sure.
Like, you can tell, like, he's very, I mean,
Absolutely.
He's very
I'd
subtle,
totally agree with
especially
that.
With the buildup of that first hour. But listen, I think he pulls off a scene that would have been a gag for any teenage sex comedy of the last 20 years, especially those that came out in the early 2000s.
That's a really
we
good
We don't
want
to give away any spoilers. I already kind of did.
You already did.
No, it's an Easter egg.
Right. You're right.
But he
you're
pulls off
right.
that kind of scene and makes it one of the most dramatic in the movie. Points,
given proper
points.
Levity, yeah, it's definitely a dramatic and it's a serious scene. I mean, there are points where certain characters do laugh, but that's kind of to break the tension of the awkwardness of the scene as it's supposed to be, high tension and awkward in that moment between two characters. So it's very, very well done. And a nice analogy by you. Look at that.
Once in a while. Army Hammer got snubbed. Despite his best short game, I'm going to call it.
I am, again, a pro wrestling fan, so I'm going to go ahead and not mention Armie Hammer's name until we get to the Mike and Oscars, because I want him to come back into these recordings like a hero coming back at the big reveal. Because he fucking did get snubbed. He
yes.
should be the best supporting actor race, no question.
So we might have to come up with a new word for the backlash that this has caused, because to Call Me By Your Name faithful, they are one of the most dominant forces in the history of the internet. When we saw it, I mean, this is a high hit episode for our podcast, and they are all over the internet.
And it's interesting, too, because if you watch what happens on Twitter in terms of these movies, I don't know if it is that faithful, like you just dubbed them, or if it's just the proponents that are against Three Billboards, but there is, without question, a momentum, a wave of turning against Three Billboards and all the nominees and recognition it's been getting and instead putting it on Call Me By Your Name, where they think it's rightfully so. So it's going to be interesting for sure. How about that the Academy wants a redo for their 2005 Best Picture fuck-up, where they gave it to the movie Crash over Brokeback Mountain and has been derided for it as one of the worst picks in Best Picture picks in Academy history ever since. Make up for that oversight in 2005. Give it to the character that's finding out his sexuality, if not the openly gay character, which they already snubbed Hammer, we just talked about, who is the openly gay character in this, to an extent.
Yeah, I don't know if they draw the lines that way, the Academy. At this stage, I hope not, based on subject matter. I mean, Moonlight won last year, so if they're just voting cause and issue. But, you know, one of the things we praised this movie for was that it was not an issue movie.
Right, and it's far more, you're going to be told that this is the gay love story of the year, and it's far more than that.
So the people that didn't watch them all yeah. might vote that way.
And that could be a reason
why he doesn't
win. So what are some other reasons why Timothée Chalamet will not win the Best Actor Award?
In other years, this performance probably would take it. This year, it just so happens he's going against Gary Oldman's career-defining performance, Daniel Day-Lewis's final act. He's perhaps going against the greatest actor of our generation in Denzel, if it's not Daniel Day-Lewis. And, you know, another great up-and-comer who unfortunately might steal or split some of that new Academy vote.
Can definitely see it.
So Kaluuya and Chalamet could, like, split that goodwill for the new guy.
And they're the two, you know, as much as this isn't an issue movie, there is that storyline threaded throughout the movie. So.
No, it's still there. I don't disagree with you.
So there could be absolutely the social justice movement splitting that vote without question. It could cost both Kaluuya and Timothée Chalamet of their moment in the sun here.
How about you, Mike? Why is he going to lose?
I have in big, bold letters because Elio wasn't Winston Churchill. And that's the main reason, because like you said, this is Gary Oldman's time, damn it. I'll pound the table if it wouldn't disrupt the microphone, but this is his performance, his year. He's been talked about getting this trophy for 20 months now, almost 2 years, ever since the inception of Darkest Hour came out.
If you put 3 hours of makeup on Timothée Chalamet, who would he be?
The merman from Shape of Water.
Paul Giamatti.
And look, Timothée Chalamet, this is going to suck, and it's going to be an unfixable reason, but he's the hero for the most powerful social justice movement of 2015. When gay marriage and open acceptance, and that was the issue of the day,
right?
When same-sex marriages being adopted and by federal law and being made law of the land, when that was the prevalent storyline, of course he would win. But again, are movies and characters seen against the backdrop of their year? Well, if they are, it's been the racial issue, the Me Too, and the Time's Up movement this year has been the movements of the moment. And there are other nominees that kind of knock on that door.
Again, and the both of us talked about it throughout that whole episode. This is not an issue movie. This is just, this is a summer romance movie.
But
and
because it's
and it's very universal.
Because it's not,
because
an,
it's
issue
not an issue movie, it's not going to, you know, hold the flag in the same way. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think because some of the Academy maybe didn't see the movie.
It's something we talk about time and again. It's certainly a possibility.
They didn't take the time to rewatch it. I heard a lot of criticism of the movie that too many bike rides, you know, just kind of a boring first hour complaint.
I'm on the record. I said that in our podcast. The first 40 or so minutes, it takes a while for the plot to get going.
I would argue that it hits a lot of those conventional beats of a romance, of a back and forth buildup. It hits them lightly, and then it kind of goes nuts at the end. That's a Luca Guadagnino, I would say, convention at this point. If you watch A Bigger Splash, it's kind of the same way. It's very, very under the radar and how it's hitting those genre conventions, and then it just goes off. I mean, off, I don't want to say off the rails. Well, some of his movies go off the rails, but they get wild at the end, and this movie's like that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. It's a great point. How about the idea that, this is my final point of why he won't win, but how about the idea that the Hollywood half measure thinks that the nomination for this character is enough? He doesn't need to win. We put the spotlight on the issue that this character represents, and that's all we need to do. We don't need to win it. It's been done before. It has been a Hollywood half measure. It's been wrong in the past. Might be wrong in retrospective here.
The
Who
kid,
knows?
He's probably a nominee in every year. I wonder if his age gives him
The Christopher Plummer argument, the Willem Dafoe argument. Yeah, sure.
I mean, he's so young. He's going to be back,
he's
going
to be here again.
He's
going
to be here
of course.
Again and again. Dan Marino's going to go to the Super Bowl again and again. He never went back. I mean, he's got the rest of his career to go to the Oscars and win Oscars. And I mean, he seems like the type of actor, if you look at his entire year, Lady Bird and Hostiles, even though he's barely in Hostiles, but big movies with great directors.
I bow at the altar of Chalamet. I'm already well on record. Him, Saoirse Ronan, Lupita Nyong'o, Jennifer Lawrence, that's the future of Hollywood. These guys and girls should be running this industry for years to come. So speaking of someone not so young and actually on record as this being his final performance, Daniel Day-Lewis, American Treasure.
First of all, do you think he's retiring?
No. No.
I
said no. I hope not. I think he's going to...
Big break?
Yeah. Why not take a step aside, stop living like you're someone else for a month and...
Come back at 64?
Yeah.
And now we got to get this argument out of the way, too. Is he just an amalgamation of all of his characters when he dresses for promotional videos, which is a great point.
I've never had to dress myself.
Or is he like a time traveler? Like he's the last time he dressed as himself was the late 90s.
Was that like CBGB's in downtown New York in the punk scene?
Because he looks like Ewan McGregor in Trainspotting in this movie.
You're not going to let this go, are you?
But here's another thing. Finally, just to go back to it, is he just trying to pull one over on us? Show us that his out-of-work persona is so weird and eclectic that when he actually does a character role, this is how far his range is.
I have a question for you, and longtime listeners of MMO will understand where I'm coming from with this. Did Ewan McGregor's parents do something awful to you in a past life? that you have to keep questioning who raised him.
I really like Ewan McGregor.
Because we've had Albert Finney being his father.
He looks like
Daniel
Albert
Day-Lewis being him.
And he looks more like a younger Albert Finney. I don't know why. I see it. I can't help it.
So tell me why Daniel Day-Lewis wins his fourth Best Actor statue.
Because it might be the best performance of the year. I think he's brilliant in this. I have become obsessed with this movie. I watched it again Sunday morning.
Playing Reynolds Woodcock in The Phantom Thread. I should have added that in, but yes, that's his role.
Yes. Listen, if it's not Denzel, Daniel Day-Lewis might be the greatest actor of our generation, like I said.
I would love to see someone argue you on that. It's so black and white to everyone that you want stats. Jack could be in that conversation too, obviously.
I guess the argument would be like, the number of roles. Daniel Day-Lewis has been so picky, and he's chosen only a few. Denzel watches
him.
And, you know, Daniel acts in a couple of years.
It is an interesting argument because every role Daniel Day-Lewis picks at least gets mentioned in the awards circuit,
right,
if not straight out nominated. Denzel, they don't all get mentioned in the awards circuit, but they're all highly entertaining. I mean, Man on Fire, Equalizer.
He does some movie star movies, yes. Daniel Day-Lewis has done the big Oscar contender movie every 4 years, every 3 years, whatever it's been. Listen, because Daniel Day-Lewis spent nearly 2 years as an actual apprentice to fashion designers and craftsmen and women.
One of the most surreal stories about any nominee in any category this year.
I mean, he sewed an entire business suit for his wife as the end of his apprenticeship.
It's like the big ending of method acting. Like, what can I do to actually finally become this character for real? He couldn't become Abe Lincoln because he wasn't in the 1860s. Yeah. My Left Foot Painter, because obviously he's an able-bodied human. So this is him finally becoming his character in full.
But do you think he would have stopped before he could draw with his foot?
No!
That's the thing. Like, he makes sure he could do what he's supposed to be pretending to do. And that's amazing to me, and that's probably amazing to all of Hollywood. I do think this movie's gotten a lot of late momentum. I don't know. I don't think it's enough to...
I touched on this in the supporting actress pod. I totally agree. There is something to be said about the time that this came out. I believe it was the latest nominated picture that debuted this year on Christmas, so you only had a week before the end of the year. And the time that nominations closed, it closed January 12th, I want to say, 11th or 12th, so you only had that 3 week window to get this, to get the movie digested, the part digested, yep, and those nominations filled out.
We figured on a couple nominations, you know, for best costume design, mm-hmm, maybe best score, Daniel Day-Lewis, but we never thought six. We never thought six. Best director, best picture.
How about that no entity cherishes their own history or their own storylines like the Academy? How juicy is this, right? Let me pitch this to you as a screenplay. Mm-hmm. Revered. A revered actor, arguably the best of all time in his day, certainly, is going to call it a career and hang it up. And when he hangs it up, it's on this obscure performance as a seamstress in this beloved director's secret picture. And it finally comes out to critical appraise and applause. And he wins not only an Academy Award for Best Actor, but the record-breaking Academy Award in his final performance.
Dude,
in this movie.
No offense to Gary Oldman. If Gary Oldman starred in this movie, how many people would have seen it?
It's a fair point. It's a fair question, right? Man. Fair question.
We all love Paul Thomas Anderson. We do. But it would have been a niche movie.
You're not wrong.
And it probably wouldn't have been up for all these awards. And it's amazing that these two guys worked together on this. They felt like they were so on a roll in their careers. And Paul Thomas Anderson, like, I can do anything, and let me pick this
obscure
thing.
Watch me make this movie about a seamstress.
Yeah, let me do a deep dive into this for 3 years and make it interesting to everybody. And I was shocked at how this movie grabbed me and why I'm obsessed with it.
Oh, the storyline alone,
I can give two shits about 1950s fashion.
Well, again, it's about 1950s fashion as much as you and I are about nutritional values, right?
I am not fashionable.
It says it is, but there's more to it.
I look like exactly what you think.
How about the biggest reason I think we can end the why he'll win on here, and you already said it outright. How about that the performance is just really fucking good?
In my opinion, every scene is an Oscar reel scene. The looks he gives, he has certain mannerisms for certain moods of his character. So he'll repeat them and then take them to another level. Like when he's distasteful of something, and but he's trying to get along. Mm-hmm. Or when he's just flat out angry with his sister or with a girlfriend or whatever, and he's blustering. He'll do that again and again, and it's amazing to watch how he does it with the first girlfriend, and then when he tries to do it with the main character, and she throws it back in his face, how he responds to that, and how fast, you know, his character reacts.
Yeah, we've seen him play real-life historical figures
almost
before.
Almost gave 10 spoilers there.
We've seen him play real-life historical figures before, but to see him create this totally new entity from his own head and play it as if it's a real-life historical figure is just amazing to watch.
He might be on another level. I just think the subtlety of this performance, and this is another one I think it needs a rewatch, because the first time you're just trying to absorb the movie, it needs a couple rewatches, in my opinion, because I just think he's on a whole nother planet with his abilities, yeah.
So tell me why Reynolds Woodcock is not going to be enough to win Daniel
because
Day-Lewis, best actor.
He didn't get 3 hours of makeup every day before shooting. I mean, he lived that part. He walked onto the set and basically took 10 minutes to put on his or I don't know, that montage was what, 4 minutes? Probably.
Yeah.
The movie time. Yeah. Montage time is probably 2 minutes. Movie time expanded is probably like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
He probably dressed exactly like Reynolds Woodcock would dress every day. So he probably took about a half hour to be thorough.
Three-piece suits and whatnot, sure. Yeah, I have the same main reason, and I hate to be repetitive like this, but Reynolds Woodcock wasn't a real person, and Winston Churchill was. We have something to judge Gary Oldman, who's... We keep bringing him up because he's the favorite by far, you would think, after all the precedent he set.
Dude, he's not going to win Daniel Day-Lewis because Gary Oldman just followed his playbook.
Yeah, also true.
The Lincoln playbook.
Become another character, yeah. And in our review of Darkest Hour, it's not hitting the same notes that Lincoln did for us, right? It's not exactly the same guy, but it's certainly unique in a way that playing a historical figure only can be compared to a story from scratch.
One of the most revered characters of his culture, of his nationality. I mean, he's playing the British Lincoln, you know? I mean, Lincoln... is our Lincoln, and he's playing the British version of that superhero.
To that point, superhero. Hollywood loves when A-listers go ugly. And you just said, Gary Oldman's in a makeup chair for 3 hours every day putting that suit on, whereas Daniel Day-Lewis really didn't have the prosthetics and the stuff to deal with. Charlize Theron in Monster, Robert De Niro gaining weight in Raging Bull, Nicole Kidman wearing that nose in The Hours. They love when A-list stars... change themselves.
Christian Bale in The American Hustle.
Christian Bale in The Machinist too got a lot of praise.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That skill scares
disgusting.
Me.
Disgusting. But they love when A-list stars change themselves.
Isn't he gaining a ton of weight now for Dick Cheney? He is.
Is he? I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
He's doing Dick
That's
Cheney. And he's like our weight now.
Well, then I guess we can pencil him in for best actor
next
year.
He's our favorite. He's just our favorite guy.
Aside from the way he treats stagehands on set. But Gary Oldman put on the prosthetics.
Except for that, yes.
Gary Oldman put on the prosthetics. Daniel Day-Lewis didn't.
Was Daniel Day-Lewis's character too much of a dick in this movie? I mean, the character was super abrasive. I think it's an affront, or not an affront, it is a front for his character's insecurities, and I think that there's a lot of nuances.
Part of the performance.
There's subtext, text, all that. Layers, like an onion inside of a Russian doll, layers to this performance. So I don't know. I'm pretty bullish on it.
Pretty interesting, just an Oscar nugget. Only three actors ever have won a triumvirate of Oscars: Daniel Day-Lewis, Jack, and Walter Brennan. The other two, Jack and Walter Brennan, only had one more nomination after their third win. Lost that nomination, was never nominated again. Daniel Day-Lewis, 3 Oscars. This is his one more nomination.
Wow.
Obviously, a fourth has never been won by anyone. Move on to Daniel Kaluuya playing Chris in Get Out. Performance highly loved throughout the world, especially considering it came out about a year ago. Mike, tell us why Chris is good enough for Daniel Kaluuya to win Best Actor.
Daniel Kaluuya might have the most versatile performance of the year and the most versatile of these 5 nominees. The movie might still be one of the hottest going, even months after its release, which is unbelievable to me. And by the way, Black Panther coming out next week.
Yeah, we're going to have a movie event pod for that. I'm super stoked.
That might also be something we consider a early bird Oscar pod. I mean, if it's that good, yeah, if it's 100% tomato meter good.
I was going to say, I think it's 97 right now or something. Somebody got in there and screwed it up.
Maybe that's the one to break through for Marvel.
Could be. You never know. It's going to happen sooner or later, right? I mean, one of these, and the table was set by this movie, you would think.
Dude.
Because this is not supposed to be an Oscar contender. This is not supposed to be a lead actor vehicle.
Yeah.
And yet here we are.
Blumhouse is now responsible for the WGA's Best Screenplay of the Year. Best Original Screenplay.
I can feel my heart smiling.
Blumhouse.
I could feel my heart smiling.
Isn't that amazing?
He's also the producer on a dog movie coming out on Netflix called Benji, which I will not watch because that dog either turns murderous or something awful happens to it. Jason Blum, you're not fooling me anymore.
But we love horror movies here. Yes. And yeah, I mean, we're thrilled that a horror comedy, of all things, is getting this much pub. We might not root harder for a protagonist in any movie than for Daniel Kaluuya.
Which is amazing if you think about it. Amazing.
And that's a testament not only to the direction and the writing, but that character.
Yeah.
I mean, he pulls it off.
You need the actor. The words on the page are certainly one thing, but you need the actor that can elicit that emotions out. He's the right nominee at the right movie at the right time, received by the public in the right way. Is one of the biggest arguments.
We've mentioned he's the straight man against the comedians, Lil Rel. I've mispronounced his name on former podcasts.
We need to get to a point where you can meet him so you can apologize to him in person.
I've mispronounced his name.
Because you've murdered his name a couple times.
What did I call him?
Lil Ren was a big
Kylo
one for you.
Ren. Yeah. This is around Star Wars time. Kylo Ren is hysterical with Daniel Kaluuya and Get Out. But yes, I think he's the straight man in that, you know, surrounded by funny characters. He is the protagonist in a thriller. He's a scream queen / vulnerable hero in a horror movie. He's all this in this movie. And he's also the Sidney Poitier kind of role in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, and that's social satire.
I like that.
He is all of these things in one role. That's why I think everybody's brains are just short-circuiting because of how well Jordan Peele balanced all these things and you need the actor to pull that off.
Yeah, no question. How about the effect that his performance had on all moviegoers? Obviously, we don't have the perspective of the African-American community, the black community, on how we saw that.
Right.
But as a white moviegoer, the white male moviegoer, who was the most villainized, I guess, and rightfully so, for this kind of casual racism, every single one of us white people either has said to ourselves while watching that movie, or at least knows someone who has dropped the argument of, well, I'm not racist, I have black friends. But... And Kaluuya's Chris finally delivered a message. Right, exactly. And Kaluuya's Chris finally delivered a message that even stubborn white people had to be like, oh, that's why that's racist. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it kind of turns the mirror on all of us in a way that we all just said, fuck.
Yeah.
That's us.
Correct.
Yeah.
So Lady Bird has characters in it on purpose, deliberately, and Greta Gerwig's mentioned it, surrogates for the entirety of the audience. You got the old white man dad. Dads relate to Tracy Letts. You got the young boyfriends. We all were young boyfriends at one point. We weren't as good looking as Timothy Chalamet or Lucas Hedges, but we were that age once, so we relate. We were all the best friend. We were all the whatever. You know, you got surrogates for all different kinds of characters.
Who mean
on
well.
Purpose.
Yeah.
There are no surrogates that we should want to relate to in Get Out. We are with, we're riding or dying with Daniel Kaluuya's character of Chris. And that's on purpose and deliberate. And it, like I said, we can't root harder for any other character.
And that's why he's not going to win. Because was it Daniel Kaluuya that's the star making? Or is a star born in Jordan Peele more so?
Jordan Peele looks like he's the front runner for the WGA Best Original Screenplay. Like we said, he wrote and directed the shit out of this movie, and he's getting most of the credit. You're correct.
Right? That's got to matter, doesn't it? Especially in the year where the Academy so kind of is tripping over themselves to recognize the greatness of this film. Rightfully so, by the way.
Right.
Because there was a time where this kind of fell off because, oh my God, it's a February release, and we can't really give this to a horror comedy and blah, blah, blah. Screw all that.
Right.
But still, it's Daniel Kaluuya's star-making performance that's getting all the recognition to Jordan Peele. That should matter.
Christian Bale should have been nominated for American Psycho as a horror comedy, you know, pioneer. Daniel Kaluuya and Jordan Peele, they're the same kind of pioneers in this movie. We said it all the way back in our very first episode of the pod when we were just reviewing our summer movies. That was months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been going for this nomination. My question to you now is, does the Academy think the nomination is enough? Is that enough acknowledgement?
It's the half measure. And I hope not. I don't have an answer, obviously. We won't know until Oscar night. But, man, I hope not. Because there is one movie this year that I think both of us want so desperately to take home Hardware. To call it an Oscar winner, I think it's this one. And whether that's screenplay, Jordan Peele, or director, Jordan Peele, or best picture, Jordan Peele.
Everybody's putting their money down for best screenplay right now, original screenplay. So
and I think that is hurting the chances of Kaluuya.
It's possible. It's very possible. So the biggest reason why he's probably not going to win, though, is our next guy. You ready to transition?
Yeah, well, that was a hell of a transition. I wasn't expecting it. I was taken by surprise.
But Mike, why? I'm going to give you the one first.
All right, go ahead.
Why is Gary Oldman going to win this thing?
Because Gary Oldman wasn't in Darkest Hour.
Winston
Churchill was. Look, we gave it to Lincoln. It's not the same performance. It hits similar notes. You can't tell me any other actor in this category became their character more. You could say the same. You could argue that Daniel Day-Lewis was as good as Reynolds Woodcock, but nobody became more their character than Gary Oldman. Winston Churchill proposed to Gary Oldman's wife, for Christ's sake, on the set of this movie.
We don't have the comparison for Reynolds Woodcock.
Right. Right. That's true.
That's the thing. And you have the comparison for Winston Churchill.
And does it hold as much water? It's pretty damn close, isn't it?
It's pretty darn good. He plays Churchill, the one that we've all studied and worshipped over the years, that an entire continent has sung the praises of, for sure. So we actually get a character here, though, that's fully realized. And like we said, flaws, weaknesses on full display, all his debauchery, all his drinking and smoking, and all the fears and doubts that crippled his action. When you went into Darkest Hour, did you think you were going to go and see like an underdog story in the sense that Winston Churchill was going to be a lesser persona?
Yeah, in terms of the making of Winston Churchill as opposed to the Winston Churchill movie, right?
Right. So I think that we all had to wrestle kind of with that narrative that we didn't think we were
bit of
get.
An adjustment.
So
yeah.
the result of that is, though, the actor can play more and the actor can give us more range, and you
wide
see
range
the
emotions,
vulnerability.
Yep.
Yeah, that's why it's such a showcase for Gary Oldman. And it's amazing that he looks good in the role. So the costuming and the makeup and hair, those might get awards too.
Hollywood loves the A-list going prosthetic. We're on a bit of a streak, too, for the Oscar award, because the last four times an actor has won both the Golden Globe for drama, Best Actor Drama, and both the Critics' Choice Award for Best Actor, he has gone on to win the Oscar for Best Actor as well.
How about the best line of the movie, Mike? He's going to win because...
You cannot reason with a tiger when your head is in its mouth!
You thought we would have planned that. Mike just remembers that. I wrote it down on my Google document. Mike didn't write it down. I saw
I'm
him.
Taking
so.
Applications for friends, if you'd like to be my friend.
He can quote obscure Oscar movie nominees.
So here's, might be the hardest question of the whole episode. Why is Gary Oldman not going to win?
I mean, it's going to be hard to make that argument because he won all the precursor awards and seems on a collision course with this Oscar. SAG, Golden Globe, Critics' Choice now. So, all right, here goes nothing. Listen, we covered it in the Oscar Sprint profile. Oldman was accused of something very nasty and terrible back in 2001.
Yep.
The justice system threw the allegation kind of out the window and awarded him full custody of his children after the allegation was made in the press. After that happened, he was awarded full custody. So,
which was in the court. I mean,
yes.
The court awarded him full custody of
his children. There's this lingering stench with what happened. But the accusations that he was a recovered alcoholic.
It's murky.
Well, he was supposedly a recovered alcoholic. Because I want to get these details right, because I don't want to screw that.
People coming for us.
Yeah, I think at the time, going back to my pod, and go back and listen to Darkest Hour. I mean, he was a recovered alcoholic. Was she lying during the custody battle? I don't. Everybody says that's a common thing. Like, I wouldn't know. I don't know at all. The court ordered pretty quick on it. It's an allegation that has been referenced.
It leads to a murky personal history.
Referenced now, yeah.
We're living in a time right now where murky has become demonized 9 out of 10 times right now. If you're accused of something in your past, it's not shown in the greatest light right now. talk about it all the time with this, and we hate talking about it. And especially, this is a case where it would seem this guy might be on the right side of it, at least as far as the court having worked for a court system, I can tell you definitively,
right,
they parse through the details, and they will always, in these family matters, vote in favor of the best interest for the children. So that said, they're not going to give anyone custody of children's lives just because they're famous or have a good lawyer or et cetera, et cetera. It's going to be the best situation for the children. That's all I can bring to the table with that.
Wow. So if that allegation blows up somehow over these next 3 weeks, if there's a story, a couple follow-up stories that totally derail his chances, like James Franco, we just saw it happen, I mean, that would do it. I would say the other two main forces that he's got to reckon with, Timothy Chalamet's got a lot of momentum, and so does Daniel Day-Lewis on what could be his final performance. Does Hollywood keep rewatching Phantom Thread, and have we underestimated Phantom Thread several times over in the media, in the prediction business? Have they underestimated the Phantom Thread momentum?
So Mike and I just had this long, long discussion that we took off the mics for. It ended in a lot of yelling.
You didn't record at all? Because that could be its own episode.
No, it was a lot of yelling, a lot of things said. I still am not a fan of Darkest Hour, the movie. I understand all the implications that were said. I just wanted more from the film, and I can't for the life of me explain why.
I would agree that the movie might not be good enough to just make this a no-brainer winner. So
maybe,
I'll give you that much.
That's
I mean, if the movie was phenomenal, if it was a no-brainer movie, like I didn't want it to be a Best Picture nom, so I would agree with you in that regard.
Maybe
I thought it's an above-average movie in my opinion.
That's,
I gave it a
what
B+.
I keep saying, I think it's a great performance and a okay movie, but maybe that's the. I seriously, for the life of me, cannot properly eloquate my feelings about
well,
what
well, obviously,
the
I can't either I because I can't convince you one way or another. I don't know what else to say.
Let's just move on. Denzel Washington played Roman J. Israel.
Which is a movie I love, though. We don't like this movie
no,
either.
In Roman J. Israel, tell me why Denzel will win the Best Actor award.
He's one of our most revered actors.
You're a revered asser.
Asser. He's one of the best actors of his generation. I mean, there's a great Oscar reel scene, great-ish Oscar reel scene in the middle of this movie that I think is Denzel at the peak of his powers. Where
yeah, because he's such a good actor, he creates this whole new character that is very interesting on screen. The character, anyway.
If the Academy avoided seeing this movie for a while or just, like, did not see this movie at all, maybe he gets a lot of votes.
Could be. Or how about the Academy feels bad about last year's Fences robbery?
Oh, that's a great point. That's a great point. And I had it too. But no, it's a great point because he was robbed last year in our opinion, my opinion.
In the Academy's opinion, apparently they didn't outright disinvite Casey Affleck, but Casey Affleck removed himself from the proceedings for giving out the Best Actress award this year, in part because of the social backlash. Denzel doesn't
also because
have...
he settled for thousands of
yeah,
dollars.
Yeah, well that's Denzel doesn't have that history. He's right. He's and that could be it could be the Academy saying, "Hey, thanks for not
God,
for being an A-lister for 30 years and not having ever
would
getting
the,
your nose dirty."
Would the world be worth living in if Denzel was guilty of something like that? Oh my God. It'd be
What would you do if Derek Jeter took steroids?
Oh, it'd be a nightmare. But Denzel's a family man.
Thanks for being the 30-year A-lister. That's clean as
clean. 30-year A-lister, one of the best of our generation. We talked about the quality argument with Daniel Day-Lewis. Well, there's a quantity of quality work with Denzel Washington that, I mean, just...
That's
just
good wordplay.
Yeah, I mean, just listing his IMDb filmography in the Roman J. Israel Esquire took us, what, 10 minutes?
Yes.
Took us forever.
He's a treasure. He's an absolute cinematic treasure.
We bantered treasure. Throughout. So I think for Denzel to get nominated in a movie this bad, to a less degree, not because of she's to a less degree, but to Meryl Streep in a movie as mediocre as The Post, in my opinion, and Mike... you can say
I enjoyed The Post, but I mean, are you trying to say that this is as in the same level as The
I'm
Post?
I'm saying it's in the similar vein in the sense that
they were both disappointing. I could see
the movies aren't good enough to be nominated.
Yeah, in okay. My opinion. No, that's fair. That's
but
fair.
You're right. You're right. This is a whatever. It's a whole nother level.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. And that's why, I mean, that's the main reason why I would say Denzel won't win the best actor on this night. This movie is...
Did I just accidentally transition?
You did. You're becoming very good at this hosting thing.
No.
Becoming terrible at explaining why I'm wrong about certain things that I obviously can't properly explain. So I need you to read my mind better, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please. He's going to lose because this movie sucks.
Yeah, it's bad. It's a bad movie.
The writing is bad. The story doesn't work. The quality of the film kind of disqualifies him.
Yeah,
it disqualifies him from winning anything for this. We love Denzel, and we're angry at how much we love Denzel.
I like this performance of his. Like I said, this is a redeemable character that I would love to see on screen, but in this storyline... Oh, God, no.
The character assassinates himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Any moral code that he's supposed to have, he assassinates himself, takes a breakneck turn in the middle of it. You made that point eloquently.
Unlike as opposed to everything hour, else I've done
no,
in
you
the
made
last
that,
25
you
minutes.
You made a great point in that episode at how he just...
Completely changes his constitution, what makes him
yes.
that character, yeah, for sure.
Yes, well said, of course. Listen, as crazy as it is to say, Denzel's probably nominated because of the... backlash to James Franco here. He's probably that number five spot. It's a harsh thing to say.
I won the Golden Globe. You know, I mean, he should. Not that there's a great history for Golden Globe Best Actor Comedy winners getting the nomination.
Right.
But we threw ourselves behind, I would say, Jake Gyllenhaal and James Franco, the both of us were way off on, because we were sure those were two performances that would see their names come Oscar time. Nowhere to be found. James Franco, well, as much as Denzel did character assassination with Roman James Israel, James Franco may have done career assassination to himself with
Very
the Me Too
true.
Movement.
And honestly, just the fact that we're keeping these sections, like why Meryl Streep's going to lose, why Denzel's going to lose, just the fact that we're keeping those sections pretty short shows you how much we respect those actors.
Yeah.
So, Mike, you got any more reasons?
Just one more. Forest Whitaker for The Last King of Scotland in 2006, the lone example in the past 20 years of the lead actor award going to a nominee that was the sole nomination representing his movie.
Oh, really?
So Denzel being the lone nomination from Roman J. Israel, only one time has somebody broken that mold and taken home the trophy.
That kind of dooms Willem Dafoe then, too.
Well, this is only lead actor.
Okay.
Not supporting.
Right, good.
Clarify I can only do that. So much research. So let's go into Perfecting Perfection. We'll start it. We re-rank these nominees 5 through 1. We give you who should be seen as number one out of these 5 nominations that the Academy gave us. I'm going to have a feeling that we have the same number 5. Who is your number 5, Mike?
It is Denzel.
Yes, we have the same number 5.
We just said why.
No argument there. Number 4 for you.
Tough, because the top 4 are awesome this year. I think these 4 would be nominated any year. Like I said with the Best Actress pod, I thought the top 3, you can just rename them 1 A, B, C. You know?
Yeah, I don't disagree.
My opinion, these 4 are pretty close.
These are great performances.
They're very close.
Again, I don't think it's going to be won by a performance that you're going to think is going to go down in history with the Lincolns and all the big top Best Actor winners, but it's in the upper echelon for sure.
Yeah, I think there's an elite 4 here, but somebody has to be number 4, so it's Timothy Chalamet for me.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Oh, really?
I hate putting him there. I think that movie deserves more respect than it's getting from the Academy and from critics in general. I would love to see them take home something more than the adapted screenplay Oscar.
Right.
It seems a lock to win. But again, it's tough. Any other year, like you said, Chalamet wouldn't be going up against Daniel Day-Lewis, Gary Oldman,
yeah,
and Daniel
2 months Kaluuya. Ago, yeah. I would have predicted Armie Hammer had like... could have been a front runner for
Still
Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I thought he was a slam dunk nominee. I don't know, maybe not 2 months, but 3 months ago when we started this thing. Like,
yeah,
he was up there.
I'm with you. I don't understand it, but it is what it is. And unfortunately, Chalamet sees himself at both our number 4s. I'll go number 3 first. I got Daniel Day-Lewis at number 3.
I got Daniel Kaluuya.
Well, we both agree it's a Daniel.
It's a Daniel. We both agree on the Daniel is 3. Why do you have Daniel Day-Lewis there, Mike? Wrong! You're so wrong!
I like how you awakened.
You're so wrong! I timed that perfectly.
Yeah, you did. That was beautiful.
But go ahead.
We have an interesting case with the two guys I have above it. And I'm not going to reveal my order yet. I have Kaluuya and Gary Oldman.
Right.
One is, again, that Lincoln-esque performance. That's Gary Oldman, Churchill. Daniel Kaluuya is the lead actor in the most culturally relevant film in probably the last 20 years. I think that should matter. And I love this performance by Daniel Day-Lewis. I love this cast in The Phantom Thread. I love the movie, the content of the story. I just don't know that it is capable or it should beat out those other two for that reason.
Honestly, I can't really quibble with you too much because, like I said, these four are close to me.
They are.
I think
I
they're
agree.
Very
especially
good.
Especially the top three for me.
But nominated in any year. And I have Kaluuya in the number three spot. I've had him there for a while, I think. And Get Out is just an awesome movie. He should be a nomination in any year. He should be the Al Pacino of the 1974 pod that we did, where he's the young on the rise actor. Maybe he's not the Al Pacino. Maybe I think Dustin Hoffman might have been younger in that example.
And you said him and Chalamet could cannibalize each other's votes for sure.
With the young guy vote, yeah. With the up-and-comer vote. So, yeah, Kaluuya is that on-the-rise kind of actor for me. I mean, he's awesome in that Black Mirror. He's really good in Sicario, and he needs to do more stuff. But he's picky and choosy, too, like Daniel Day-Lewis. So
give me your 5 through 3 again.
So my 5 was Denzel. My 4 was Chalamet. My 3 was Kaluuya. You want me to give my 2, or are you ready for
I'll recap first. I was Denzel, Chalamet, 5-4, Daniel Day-Lewis. That means you're going to have Daniel Day-Lewis and Gary Oldman as 2-1 in some order. I'm going to have Daniel Kaluuya and Gary Oldman as 2-1. You want to start, or you want me to?
Gary Oldman is my number 2 this year.
Whoa!
So that means Daniel Day-Lewis is my number 1.
Wow!
I think he's on another planet. I love this movie. I love this movie. I love this performance.
That shock should tell you. I have Churchill as my number 1. I did not Oldman. Churchill is my number 1, and Daniel Kaluuya is my 2. But go ahead, explain away.
We argued about Darkest Hour for 40 minutes.
It's a great performance in an okay movie. It's a great performance. I can't believe you.
I'm in awe of you as a man.
As a human being?
As a human being.
I have zero principle left. I have nothing to die on. I don't battle. I'm not a man, really. People argue with me, and I just say, yeah, whatever.
But you love the performance.
Yes, great performance for me. Great performance from where I sit.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree. And this is not like the slam dunk Daniel Day-Lewis.
No, again, there are differences, and I'm willing to agree with that as far. And maybe that's the reason I have an issue with the movie overall, because this isn't a slam dunk as much as everyone wants it to be for Oldman, at least not to me.
Like, if they gave the best actor Oscar of the Decade Award for... I would probably go to Daniel Day-Lewis's performance in Lincoln.
Probably, yeah. That's a good argument.
We keep making the comparisons, Oldman and Lincoln.
And maybe that's lazy of us. It's easy to make.
It's easy to make because, I mean, it's there.
Yeah.
It's there on so many levels.
But explain to me, Daniel Day-Lewis, for this performance, beating out Winston Churchill as Winston Churchill.
The nuances and the specificity of this performance.
It's a big word. It's got a lot of syllables.
Just watching the arc of it, like I said, something I never noticed before my 6th watch was how he uses the same facial expressions to showcase the same moods, and then he builds on that facial expression. It's amazing. It's a masterwork on how he builds on that little snarl at the first scene with him and his sister, showing his quote-unquote displeasure and his reticence for doing something that he has to do and drop his first girlfriend in that movie. That's one of the first 3 scenes, and it's not a spoiler. It's just one of the first 3 scenes. He's got to drop the girlfriend because he can't be with that girlfriend if he's gonna be with the other girl who's in all the trailers. So then he later in the movie he goes from that same snarl, and then she throws it right back in his face, and the snarl doesn't work. You know, all those same facial expressions. It's like he has just this Rolodex of how he's supposed to play these different moods, which when you think about it, people do that. You know, they show angry, or they show a certain kind of angry or certain kind of flustered. And when you get to know somebody, they show those same, you know,
over and over. It's a really
mannerisms
good point, yeah.
Again and again. And then he shows something entirely new when he gets the new conflict from Alma, from Vicky Krieps' character. So I just thought that was amazing. And to show that snarl break down against Manville later on in the movie, too,
mm-hmm.
I love that. And I love that he tried to the snarl again with Manville, and then she levels him later in the middle of the movie. So that's just one example. I've just found a lot of that continuity to his performance, which I'm shocked that he was able to do. I don't think he would have been able to do that if he wasn't so thoroughly involved with the screenwriting process. Like, he knew this character in and
out. Inside
and out,
yeah, for sure.
He and, you know, the story was conceived, him and Paul Thomas Anderson together. And that entire year of pre-production is those two guys writing this thing together. So it was almost like a Mike Lee kind of pre-production, where those two kind of batted ideas and came up with this movie together. I wish Denzel was able to do that, because he's such a driving force in Roman J. Israel. He just didn't have enough time to really get in this, on the same page with Mr. Gilroy there.
There's a lot of similarities between the Denzel character and Daniel Day-Lewis's character, in that they both built from the ground up, and you're right. Maybe Daniel Day-Lewis collaborating in the whole entirety of the process, being able to become the character at various different points from Inception, had a lot to do with the better performance.
Going back to the story Inception's production profiles that we wrote, though, Gary Oldman had a similar experience with Darkest Hour. So he's on that. I would think these performances to me are on the same level. It's just kind of preference for me. But Oldman memorized this role. And we talked about his ability to memorize roles.
Yeah.
You know, he
Shakespeare
coach,
on demand. Yeah.
Right. He's known throughout Hollywood to be able to just quote all of his old roles.
Kind of
on
like
demand
just
and give those speeches again. Yeah. Must have, he can. They're like a religion to him,
right?
Because he can. It's just in his brain, and I don't know how he doesn't forget it. But
let me tell you, Hollywood would be rocked with Daniel Day-Lewis taking home this trophy. But it would be a storyline, and it would be, no one's going to quibble with it.
You're
not going to argue with taking Daniel Day-Lewis as your best actor.
We'll get to our prediction pod. We'll kind of read the tea leaves for another week or two here, and before we give you that final analysis, but it's going to have to take some big stories to come out against Oldman, or it's going to have to take some... It's got to be more than somebody in the media's hunch.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, there's got to be some serious momentum. So we will see if it happens, and let us know your thoughts. Do you have a favorite for who you want to see this win, take home this award? Do you not like Gary Oldman having all the momentum and being winning all the predecessors? Do you think there's an upset brewing? Let us know. We are Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on Twitter.
Again, look at
new
you.
Twitter handle.
Look at you.
Mike and Oscar at gmail.com and Mike and Oscar on Reddit. We're all over the social media pages. We're all over Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, anywhere you can listen to podcasts. We are there. Hopefully we'll have more multimedia stuff for you out in the future. And until then, guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us, and we see you soon.
See ya.